The views expressed on AM360 by the host, hostesses, or guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Share Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific and personal medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to consult an advisor for your specific circumstances.
You have listened to us over 500,000 times. American Muslim 360.
That's interesting.
Assalamu alaikum. This is American Muslim 360 radio broadcast.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
American Muslim 360 is
too legit, too legit to quit.
We will never quit. American Muslim 360, your number one Muslim radio station.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at cwsconline@gmail.com. That's cwsconline@gmail.com. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa Allah wa wahdahu la sharika lahu wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu. Taking refuge with the one God from the shaitan, or that which distracts us from our best of character, best of conduct, best of thought, and openly testifying with all of my words and deeds that Allah, the one God, is the one God. There are no other than the one God. And that Prophet Muhammad, prayers and peace be upon him, to whom the Quran was revealed, is surely an example for all of humanity and is a servant and messenger of the one God. Greetings, everyone, to the best of the best from the archives of American Muslim 360. This is Martha Nigel, your engineer for this morning. We thank you for being here with us. And in just a moment, we are going to begin with a presentation from, and it is narrated by Thomas Abdul Salam, but it is on Omar ibn Khattab, the history from the great lengthy history of those who gave of themselves to help humanity. And I'm saying it in that way so that we can enjoy it and be a part of this history. Please enjoy. Thank you again for being here with us, the Community Wide Share Conference and the American Muslim 360, here and proud to be serving you. Assalamu alaikum.
Welcome, Muslim 360, inshallah. We're going to be continuing with our series on Omar, the Emir, the leader of the faithful. And we're going to concentrate tonight on the, I guess you would say, conquest of Islam or the Muslims moving into what is Persia, what was then Persia, and talking about many of the, I guess we call them battles, exchanges, different conflicts that took place. We're going to talk in about and concentrate on that area, the army and other things of Omar. And inshallah, we'll hopefully this will give you, again, some insight into the establishment of Islam and what we now know as the Middle East, which was mostly brought under Islam during the time, the Khalifa of Omar. And so we're going to spend, again, the rest of this month and maybe longer, because there's so much that I think we need to learn here, examine here, and so I'm going to try to slow ourselves down a little bit, take our time, and really get into this portion of the history of Islam. And so we welcome you as listeners, and we continue to hope that you are enjoying this particular series. You have any questions, you know to press 1 on your phone. That will bring you in the queue and give you an opportunity to ask any questions or to participate in this conversation. Again, this is America Muslim 360. We will be taking time out for commercials, and this being the first of them, we'll be right back.
Perfect for schools, conferences, and fundraising events. Visit livinghistoryheritage.com. Omar Ibn Said and Ibrahim Abdul-Rahman come to you live and perform their true stories. One a scholar, the other a prince, graduates of the great University of Timbuktu. African Muslims captured, sold into slavery, and eventual freedom in the United States. Enjoy and appreciate true unique stories of Timbuktu's African-American Muslim heroes. Visit livinghistoryheritage.com or call 704-777-3611 today. That's livinghistoryheritage.com or 704-777-3611. Thank you.
This is not a political election. This is the Living History Heritage Project, and we need everyone to vote for this dynamic educational program. We plan to tour the Living History Heritage Project coast to coast in 2012. This is only possible if you vote us into the top 10 category on www.refresheverything.com/Living History Heritage Project. Vote 3 times a day. Log in with an email address. Vote and log out. Log in again with a Facebook address. Vote and log out. Finally, text to this number, 73774, the following code, 109800. That's 3 votes to www.refresheverything.com/Living History Heritage Project. Don't delay. Living History Heritage Project needs your votes today.
All right, this is America Muslim 360 again. I need to apologize for any background noise. We are on the road. We are in a cafe, a public place, and so forgive me for any background noise, but hopefully I'm speaking loud enough so that you to hear, and so that also I'm not disturbing the patrons in the area as well. But again, this is America Muslim 360, and this subject matter tonight is, again, continuing with Omar II, the Khalifa. His reign was 10 years, but some of the most profound and permanent things took place under his leadership, the expansion not only of the religion itself into other areas, but the foundation, the leadership, the administration, the infrastructure of Islam, what we know as Islamic government or nation building. Most of it took place under Omar and was just maintained with maybe some other minor adjustments during the other caliphs. But most of what we know today, including the four schools of thought, the fiqh, the hadith, many of these things that we know them today have their roots back to and in the caliphship of Omar. So tonight we're going to start with the army. Prior to Omar, there was no standing army. There was no, as we see it today in our modern time, most countries have a standing army, an air force, a navy, the marines, and so and the like. Up until the time of Omar, there was no organized fighting force. It was under Omar that the army began to take shape in an organization where there was a permanent establishment of individuals, commanders, lieutenants, footmen, cavalrymen, and so forth and so on. This department got established during that time. And Omar was very instrumental in setting up not only the salaries of the army, but the establishment of what we may call forts or bases around the area, the conquered area. And so many of the things took place. And what we're going to start is we're going to start talking about the different engagements that took place and led up to, I guess you could say, and filtered into the establishment of the army and the like. And so that's what we're going to try to start tonight, picking up there as Omar as the commander in chief and moving forward from there. And I hope that you will gain some insight from this information, and if nothing else, refreshing your memory, assuming that you have read and studied into the life of Omar, the leader of the faithful. Now, under Omar, and we talked about also under the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, as well as Abu Bakr, that Khalid bin Walid was a very, I guess you can say, fierce fighter, and he was also so during the time of Omar, and particularly after Zayd, the what we may know as the adopted son of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, after he had martyrdom, then Khalid bin Walid became one of the largest fighting forces, leaders of the army that we know of, and his was his that led into the taking of what we now call Iraq. And he was asked by Omar to go to Syria to begin, I guess you can say, his reign under Omar. But it was in this position that you have Khalid himself taking up the head of the army. And inshallah, roughly in this position, with the facing the what we know the Persians, and this was a major battle and maybe a turning point in how the Muslims advanced forward into other parts of where you had the Byzantine and the Romans ruling. The Persians, they were some of the largest forces at that time, and so the Muslims were just becoming a, what you might want to say, call a world power, but even a territorial power, because prior to Islam, the prayers not really a force to be reckoned with. They were really in such a disarray position, maybe ignorance, that many conquerors felt that it was a useless thing to even go in to conquer the Arab world, that they were useless. And so no one really advanced them that much. Most of their fighting and most of their battles were really among themselves and things of this nature. So it wasn't until the advent of Islam that Arabs, i.e. now Muslims, became a regional force, let alone a global force, as the world was known at this time. So we're going to pick up the battle, and where then they're moving into Iraq. And the year here is June, listed as June 634 A.D., 634 A.D. And we're going to use this for tonight, and then hopefully from here, and mostly we probably won't get too much for that in the battles tonight, but then we're going to start back talking about some of the other advancements that the Muslims made all the way into Egypt and thereabouts, so that we can get a feel for many of these things. But it was roughly that at the Euphrates River, where the Muslims had mostly what they call Arabia, but where they began to move into what was then known as Iraq, and they began to engage the Persians at that time. And most of the, say, battles, the larger battles, particularly with the Persians, were over the advent of Islam and their rise in the region. And clearly they were still what we may call dawah, calling people to Islam. And when the Persians refused to accept Islam, I guess you could say sort of the battles became almost I don't want to say necessary, but they became inevitable, I guess, became inevitable as the Muslims continued to move forward and then spread Islam, more and more people accepting Islam, and the Persians saw them as a very threat to themselves. And so then, again, many of these things that we're going to talk about tonight began to take place. Somewhere what we call the Sawat Valley, somewhere near ancient Babylon, is where some of the fiercest fighting was done, and the Muslims began to advance. The Persian Empire was undergoing a lot of upheaval at this time. They had many changes, and we'll touch on some of them, but they had many changes in their rulership, the dynasty of Persia. So they themselves were undergoing change. The Arabs are undergoing change. And so this change, I guess you say, just began to spiral into some kind of a natural place where they began to meet each other inevitably in battle. As Abu Bakr was laying on his deathbed, he began to set up the move into Iraq, and then Omar took up this battle, and Abu Bakr told him that it was needful that he continue to move forward. So Omar addresses the people. He says, Abu Bakr addresses the people. He says, "Listen, O Omar, to what I say to you, and act upon my words. I hope to die this very day, and when I am dead, let not the evening come upon you before you have exhorted the people to go with Mumanda. And if I survive till the nightfall, let not the morning come before you have exalted the people to go with Mumanda. And Fred Abu Bakr died that night, and again, Omar then took up the banner of sending the troops into what we now know as Iraq and encouraged them to move forward, saying, "Oh, you Muslims, listen to me. You should have no fear of the Persians. I have tested the courage of the fire worshippers and discovered that they are not at home on the battlefield. Years of leisure have made them easy going. It would not be difficult for us to overpower them. We have already conquered most of the important districts in Iraq and humiliated the Persians. With a little more effort and with the help of Allah, we can become the masters of the whole of Iraq. It is incumbent on us to take the message of Allah and His messenger to these fire worshippers and offer them the true faith of Islam." And inshallah, that many people were not necessarily moved, I say, to go to battle. But then Omar made a decision that whoever would volunteer, that he was going to make them the commander-in-chief, and he was going to replace Khalid bin Walid and then even Muthanna himself. And when Abu Abaya came up and nominated and said, I will go," he made him the chief and commander of the forces. And they had, remember, this started in July, again under there, but by August, they had 1,000 people ready to march forward into Iraq. And so at this case, the Omar addressed them again, saying, "The companions are entitled to such precedence because of their courage and love of jihad. Here I have been giving the call that you had ever since we buried Abu Bakr. And I have no response from the companion now that the young man who is not a companion has given the lead. And I am determined to appoint him as the commander-in-chief. The companions have lost this precedence by their own fault, and they should serve under a man who has given a greater show of courage," meaning that this Abu Abaya was not a companion of the Prophet, but he was one who stepped forward. And so Omar was encouraging them and letting them know that the companions had lost this highest esteem role of being the leaders and going to war, and that he was going to send the army under Abu Abaid to Iraq. And so from there, they left. By the time they're get into Iraq and see many of the Persians, the first battle is what we know as Namarak. Namarak is where the first battle in pursues with the Muslims. Now it's, say, September, so we started with July. I'm trying to give you time frame so that you can see the longevity. Believe me, the longevity of some of these stretches and the forces at which they underwent and the courage it took to fight, you know, in those days. You know, nowadays we drop bombs, we fire missiles, we send in airplanes. It's a real different thing when you have to go face to face with your enemy, sword to sword, arrow to arrow, and a hand-to-hand combat. And this is where the Persians and the Muslims fought. This was warfare in those days, and it's kind of amazing. I hope and pray that you see the excitement in some of these things as I do. But anyway, as they moved forward, they became set up an outpost. By the time they reached Iraq, they had over 4,000 people, men, in the army, in the fighting force. And to me, it's always kind of amazing to think of 4,000 people marching across a land. It just seems an amazing feat to me. But, you know, how do you feed these people? How do you take care of these individuals and all of the various different things that go along the logistics of maintaining such an army? But here you have the taking place in this day and time, that there you have 4,000 people marching across a country land, and they are swords and everything else, and going to take battle. So when they meet or get to Namarak, near what is now Kaffa, near the Euphrates River, they the first army they meet and they deploy. They say deploy. They begin to arrange for battle at this particular location. Jabin himself is a Persian who he was captured by the Muslims, but he was the leader of the forces of the of the Persians. And during this battle, he was captured, but was not recognizable. And he negotiated his freedom by exchanging two of his men for his freedom. And later on, it became known that they had actually captured the leader of the Persian, at least of this particular battlefield. But the Muslims won this particular battle, and they gained a footing into the Persian countryside, really for the first time. This was the first battle of significance. And you'll see these, and I say the battles, somewhat in rapid succession taking place. In other words, as the forces move forward, that they regroup and they meet in other locations of the strongholds. And so the next one was Kaskar, where the Muslims and the Persians meet. And this is, I imagine that they have to go, this is another 200 miles from Namarak. So these men march another 200 miles to, they say, meet in battle. And at this location, and there, you've seen these things in movies, where when the two armies meet, they have these challenges. Personal challenges where one person or commander from one side will call out the commander from the other side or some prominent people, and they would meet in the middle and do personal battle. And most all of these battles, this is the beginning of a war, of a fight, how a war would start. They would call each other, or in some cases more than one person. But the bravest from one side will step forward, and the bravest from another side will step forward and say, "I challenge you to a personal duel." And the duel will then take place, and inshallah, one person is most likely killed in those battles. I'm saying all this because I'm not going to repeat them in every battle, but they are know that in every battle, the beginning of a battle, is this personal challenge that goes out. And sometimes the Muslim wins, sometimes the Persians win. But the battle, this personal duel, sets off the battle, and after one of them is killed or wounded such that the duel is over, then the forces, in this case the two forces, the Muslims and the Persians, would then commence with what I would really call very fierce fighting. Again, swords, arrows, and the like. You've seen some of these kinds of things in the movies from time to time, I'm very sure of. And this is literally how they describe these different battles that you see among the Muslims and the Persians, that the commander of the forces are somewhat at distance and sending in orders, having the flank, telling people what to do, what not to do, and doing strategy. Many battles. And even in this battle here that we're talking about right now, Karsakar. Omar was kept informed. Now, in some cases, they give mileage and distance, but I know in this case that they're probably 500 miles away from Medina, at least 500 miles plus from Medina. Yet there is this convoy, I say convoy, of communications back to Omar on the battle. And Abu Abay writes to Omar in details of the reports of the battle. And then Omar advises him. So again, Omar is not remote, even though he's back in Medina. This is still a very active situation. And again, only leave it to your imagination how this communication gets back and forth by camel, by horse. How does this communication get back and forth? But Omar, he sends him to, "You have entered the land of the tricky and the guile, dishonesty and oppression. You have marched against a people who love evil and know it well and abjured goodness of which they are ignorant. So be on your guard and watch your tongue. Reveal not your secrets, for those who guard their secrets are secure against unpleasantness and loss." So Omar is always kept in the loop of these battles, and in many cases, as you will begin to see, gives instruction, and they send back full instructions to Omar, and how instrumental he was in these particular battles. One of the fierce battles, the Battle of the Bridge. It's known as the Battle of the Bridge, and we'll, because the Muslims and the Persians, they meet on opposite sides of the Euphrates. And the issue is who will come across over to the other side to meet each other in battle. And the commander of the Persians, they had with them some 9,000 troops, and the Muslims had, again, around 4,000 troops. Usually the Persians had more troops than the Muslims had. But the point is this battle of the bridge is because when the Persians came and they said to Abu Ubaid that, "Which one of you says, either you cross and come over to our side, or we will cross over and come to your side?" And Ubaid was advised not to go over to their side. But it says that the Persian, I say, tricked him. And this is what Omar was trying to say to them. He basically appealed to him, saying, basically, "What, you're a coward? You won't come over to our side. You must be a coward." And at this, Ubaid then said, "We're coming over to your side. We're going to come over." And he was advised not to, but again, he did. So it was called the Battle of the Bridge because when they laid the bridge across to come over to the other side, fierce, fierce battle took place. The Persians had elephants in their under their command, you know. And so by telling Ubaid that he was basically a chicken-hearted commander, And he, his ego, I guess you could say, got the best of him, and he decided, guess what, we're going over. And they came across the river, and it was a disaster for the Muslims. It was a disaster for the Muslims. The Muslims were killed in great numbers. The elephants scared the horses. There was much disarray. And the Persians sat on top of the elephants, throwing javelins and bows, and they had these big bales tied around the elephants' necks. And as these bales, the elephants moved, these bales rang, and I guess somewhat with a deafening noise, which caused great disarray, not only among the horses, but among the men. So this was really a disaster for the Muslims. They got slaughtered in great numbers, and they had to get back across the bridge. Again, hence the Battle of the Bridges, the Battle of the Bridge, which it became known as, and to the point that the Muslims, in this case, they had started out with great number, but they lost almost 1,000 men on the battlefield at the Battle of the Bridges. And so the Muslims were humiliated in this particular meeting of the forces, such to the point that Ubayd was taken out, but he died in this particular battle. But he died in the sense of trying to defend the bridge to get his men back across. And he died there defending the bridge. And many, many of the Muslims jumped into the rivers with heavy armor, drowned in the river, could not get across. And so many people died in the Euphrates River that day. And clearly the Persians felt very empowered that day, and you can say rubbed it in the face of the Muslims. When Abdullah bin Zayd carried the news of the tragedy to Omar, Omar wept and basically and said, "O Lord, every Muslim in my charge, I am the refuge of all Muslims." Because I forgot to say this. Because some of the Muslims felt ashamed because they retreated, and they felt that again that they were, I guess you can say, due punishment because they did not stand and die on the battlefield. And Omar said in prayer, "O Lord, every Muslim is in my charge. I am a refuge for all Muslims. May Allah bless Abu Ubayd. Having crossed the river, he should have secured his position by the side of a hill. I wish he had not crossed and sought his death, but had returned to me. Do not weep. I am your refuge. You have returned to me," speaking to the Muslims survived. And at this, so this is, you know, real leadership, I say. You see here, Omar takes full responsibility. Even though he's not on the battlefield, which I did not say to you earlier, he told Ubayd to, "I'm sending these skillful people with you. Listen to them. Listen to the council." He did not listen to the council. He went across the bridge without the consent of the elders, let's say. So even though he did it without consent, Omar, as the leader, takes full responsibility for the outcome of the battle. Okay? He doesn't dodge in any way, shape, or form. This is real leadership. Real leadership, okay? Even though the person disobeyed his orders, his direct orders, he still sees himself as a refuge of all Muslims. Very, very powerful, statement and example of a great man, The next battle is Buwayb. After the battle of the bridge, again, the Muslims are somewhat humiliated. And in response to this, they send again for more volunteers. As 700 horsemen come, 1,000 men came from the tribe of Ben Tamim under the command of Hashim Adid, who was a legendary son of Hatim. A large contingency of his tribesmen came forward. Many Christian Arabs joined the Muslims in this in joining the, let's say, the army, the forces. And Omar even said to the Christians that he offered them even a share in the booty of anybody. He did not exclude the Christians out of the booty, out of the spoils of the war. And they were even offered a share greater than the Muslims. Again, sign of great, bold leadership. And Muthaina, you don't hear about him often, but Muthaina was, had already moved his forces. He stayed in Iraq. He didn't want to go and reinforce and send more people. And moved within a few miles of Kadisha. Now, Kadisha is what we're moving up to. This is where the great battle. These other ones, we might call them skirmishes, compared to what takes, what is destined to take place, and we have not yet got to the large. Muslims again march into what we know as Iraq or Persia. They're on the west side of the bank, and again, the Persians are on the east side of the bank. The same call goes out. The Muslims had a bitter experience of crossing the bridge. He says, now, will you cross again? And he says, no. He says, you Persians, you cross the river. You cross the river and come over. And Adib, again, was a legendary. And we did not discuss the arrangements of the army, which I might have should have. But we'll save that for another time, because I mean it's important, but not maybe in the way I'm going to be delivering these things. But here's what you need to know. Let's say this. Here's what you need to know as we talk about the battles, that Omar made certain arrangements for the strategy of war. You had, let's say, a right flank, a left flank, a front flank, and a rear flank, and then I forget what the other one is called, okay? So my point is this, in mentioning those things right now and not getting in great detail, but we're going to talk about, when we get into the real administration of Omar, that's when we'll talk about more organizational kinds of strategies that was instituted under the caliphship of Omar. We'll get more detail at that particular time. So just suffice it to know that for the moment. So when I'm mentioning certain people's names to some degree, there's a commander of the forces. Then you have these, let's call them wingmen. Okay, let's call them wingmen. Okay, somebody got the left wing, the left flank, the right flank, and so on. So just need to say that. Okay, just to kind of get some little bit of clarity, but I'll see how much we need that as we continue to move forward here. But my point right now is Adib was one of those wingmen, okay? He was one of the wingmen, okay? And Jarir was another one. And so you have the infantry, which is clearly infantry is the foot soldiers. You have the cavalry, which is those people who are on horseback. And you have the arrow, people with arrows. I don't know what's the proper name for those individuals. Bowmen, I guess, bowmen. And you have the javelers, the people who throw the javels. And then clearly most every soldier has a sword. But anyway, they are meeting now at the battle. So, Adib says, brave soldiers, beware lest on account of you, the stigma of dishonor shall fall to the Arabs. And as you've also seen in some of these movies, before they go to battle, they start with these great speeches. And believe me, you find it right here among the Muslims, and where the poets come in, the orators come in, and they give these great speeches. We're going to hit some of them, but we won't. Anyway, we'll hit some of them. But they give these great speeches before the people, the army, is assembled on the battlefield. They're ready for battle. So, kind of like a motivational, inspirational talk, reading of Quran, prayer, and these, quote, motivational talks come, and these orators come. Commanders come, and there's even a female poet that we're going to discuss in some ways down the road. And let me say this, even the women in some cases will go to war with the men. They are part of the, let's say, the logistics of this. Some people will take their wives or take one of their wives with them to the battlefield. They were there for cooking, cleaning, nursing, and in some cases, actual fighting, and inshallah we will have. I don't find many accounts, but we do have some accounts of the women also on the battlefield. But I don't want you to think that they were left at home. They were not left at home. Okay. So anyway, so with this. And also the call of Allahu Akbar, or Takbir, was also a part of the Muslims' call to war, part of the stigma, the inspiration of inspiring the Muslims for the battle. So Muthaina, then he addresses the Muslims. These are short things, but giving you some things. O Muslims, wherever you are going, I am here. Come to me. Okay? I skipped something. So, I'm sorry. The battle commences. Let's say that. I'm sorry. The battle commences, and there are, again, significant issues. But the Muthaina has a flank, and he comes up and gains a position behind the Persians, without they knowing it. So now he is calling to the Muslims to keep advancing. O Muslims, where are you going? Come to me. Come to my voice, in other words. Come here. Come to me. Keep coming forth, because I am in the back. Okay? Rally his forces and order a fresh attack. Musad, the brother of Muthaina, was again. He received many wounds and fell down in this battle, and the Muslims begin to lose heart, but he keeps calling them. The Muthaina keeps calling to them. O Muslim, never mind if my brother is killed. Valiant always dies like that. The valiant always dies like that. See that the standard that you carry is not lowered, the standard being the flag, which people carry into war. This is part of their pride. Musad, who says he is dying, he says, let not my death make let you lose heart. You must go forward to your task. Do not give up. Anas, one of the Christian commanders fighting with the Muslims, also falls, goes down in his death to in such a heroic position that Muthaina himself personally took the Christian and buried him alongside of his brother. Many Muslims are killed in this battle, and the commander of the Persians, who fought heroically, they themselves fight the Muslims back, rushing them with great courage, and penetrate in the Muslims retaliate, and then forces into them a young man who is martyred in this case. He basically, I guess you can say, led an attack almost by himself is what they're really saying, the picture they're painting here. And he himself claims to the others that I am a young man. I am a young man, and I have killed many of the Persians. And he made it all the way in, was able to kill the Persian chief. Mairan, which turned the battle in favor of the Muslims. This young man just rushed straight into the battle and was able to fight his way all the way into the chief of the Persians, which began to turn the battle in their way. And the Persians now are dispersing in great numbers, running to the river themselves, and same issue takes place with them, trying to get back across the river. Many drown, many die, but many, many corpses the battlefield that day. They say that they took the Muslims, they buried them in what we would call, a mass grave, and there they made the janaza over the Muslims. And again, the Persians have retreated, so the Muslims have gained a great victory and have gained some of their honor back. Othena says, I have fought Arabs and Persians. I have fought them in times of ignorance and again in the times of Islam. By Allah, during the days of ignorance, 100 Persians were stronger than 1,000 Arabs. But today, 100 Arabs are stronger than 1,000 Persians. And this battle took place in April 635. The Muslims have the upper hand. Now we're... Anyway, so now we're, I was trying to keep our time frame. I might have skipped the date or something. But anyway, and unimportant at the present moment. We'll get back to that. So now they asked the Khalifa what more should be done. Again, now remember, there's some points in here that they tell of the great distance. Some of the distances. But think of, again, you writing a letter back to Omar in Medina, and you're 500 to 1,000 miles away, and you're waiting for instructions to come. You're sending him details. And even, again, as we continue to move forward, this may not be maybe one of them, but anyway. The point is that Omar is sending instructions in to them as well. All right?
Thank you, listening audience. We continue next week, God willing.
Thank you
for joining me.
What we know today, yes. Khalid bin Walid began his campaign in Iraq. He started at what is called Ubala. And there was able to occupy, there was no resistance.